breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY and Billy Penn, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and Billy Penn. You can follow me on X at John Stolness. Coming up, Clearwater latest, everybody. We've got spring training getting started down in Clearwater. The pitchers and catchers have been there for a little less than a week now, but the position players are pretty much they're all there now, too. It's starting to trickle in, but most of the big names have already arrived. And some stuff that's... I've heard some interesting stuff from guys like Nick Castellanos, JT Realmuto, Kyle Schwarber, their contract situations. Alec Bohm also spoke to the media. So lots of good stuff to get to. And we'll ask a couple questions, see how we're feeling about a couple of different players here as we get ready for 2025. Liz Rocher joining me here on this roundtable edition of the podcast. Justin Clue is on vacation, taking a break, a sabbatical. I don't know what you call it, but he's not here. Liz Rocher will be joining me here on this episode of the podcast. So Liz, follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. We're getting some of the videos, you know, of the pitchers throwing, you know, in the bullpens and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think we're still kind of coasting on that Super Bowl high, but I think everybody's come down off it now. It's time to start getting the Phillies gear out. You know, it's just to bring back the 08 sweatshirt. You know what I mean? You know, let's do it.
I think people are going to stay on their Super Bowl high for a little while, and that's understandable. It was incredibly exciting and fun. And at the moment, the Phillies don't have a whole lot to offer us other than pictures of people doing things that look like but are not baseball.
Right. Right. It dawned on me, like, I was like, think about this sweatshirt, like, because it's from the 08 World Series. This sweatshirt is 16 years old.
Yeah. I look at some of the things, like, I still have a shirt, God, Hoochies for Choochie, which was my very first Phillies writing job back at Chicks Dig the Long Ball. That was 2009, 2010.
Wow.
I still have that. Does not fit me. But I still does not fit me. But I still have it. And I'm just like, that is an old shirt. That's an old shirt.
I'll tell you what, this stays in heavy rotation and it's still in great shape. Like, look at this.
It is. Yeah. It's like a bunch of my stuff is still in great shape. You know, it's nice. You know, my dad still has shirts from long, long time ago. And I don't know what it is that they do when they put things, when they print things on fabric like that. But they have not seemed to really improve it in the 16 years. And I think it's because it works real well.
Yeah, I think so. I remember when I was doing the t-shirts, like, I don't know if anybody who had any of the t-shirts that I was, you know,
I do.
Yeah. And I have a bunch. They've all faded. Like, everything's come completely off the shirt. Like, they're not recognizable anymore. So, if that's happened to you, I apologize. I can't do anything about it.
Why even apologize? That whole thing came to an unceremonious and unpleasant end. You have nothing to apologize for, sir.
That is correct. That is correct. All right. Well, let's talk about some of the stuff that's been going on down in Clearwater here since pitchers and catchers reported last Wednesday. And I want to start off with something Nick Castellanos said. I think it was on Sunday he was talking to reporters, Saturday or Sunday. But Nick Castellanos was asked about the expectations for this team, given that they've fallen one step shorter in the playoffs each of the last 3 years. And my thinking has been, I don't think there's another baseball team in the majors right now that's under more pressure to win a World Series here in 2025. If you want to win one with this core group that's been here for the last 3 or 4 years, you know, you want to have that celebration and you want JT and Kyle and Ranger and everybody else, you want them all to be together. This is probably the last year that you're going to have to do it with this particular group of players. And so I do think, you know, we'll talk about extensions for at least a couple of those guys here in a second. But, you know, I feel like there's a sense of urgency. And you would think that, you know, the fan base being dissatisfied with the offseason and it doesn't look as though the team is markedly better on paper than it was a year ago. And you see what the Dodgers have done. The Mets have improved. The Braves are, after a slow start to the offseason, they've made some moves here late. Nick Castellanos is not thinking the same thing that we are. He said, I do think we have less pressure as a team this year, especially with everything the media said about us when we lost last year and we didn't really go out and make any crazy changes. So if we lose, you guys look smart, which is dope, right? But then if we win, it's like a happy surprise. It's kind of a freeing place to play baseball. Know what I mean? Now,
no, I don't. I'm sorry. No. What are you talking about?
We all know Nick Castellanos sees the world differently. We've talked yes. about it on this podcast. He sees the world differently. He looks at things through a different lens. And if he's approaching this season with less pressure on himself, feeling like there's not as much pressure to win, then I think that's great. Because if that's how he wants to get into the right mindset to play this season, wonderful. It is patently false that there is less pressure on this team this year. Like, Liz, there's no world in which this statement is remotely true, correct?
I see where he's coming from, but then he takes like a sharp right turn and goes completely off the road. The road is going one way and Castellanos is just in the field somewhere falling into a gopher hole. I get what he's... We have less pressure. The media was very critical because we didn't make any changes. It's like, it's just, is he talking about baseball or is he talking about the media asking him that question? Because it sounds like a Nick Castellanos, you know, having a smart mouth with the media, which is fine. Like he does what he does. It's the way he is. And the guys in the clubhouse and whatnot, they all understand it to a certain extent, I think. If they win, it's not a happy surprise. It's a thank God. Oh my God. No. Clutching your chest, leaning against the, you know, leaning against the table like, oh my God, I was so worried because we all are a little worried.
Right. I think there's a couple things at play here. One, Nick Castellanos is annoyed by the negativity of the fan base. And I wouldn't say the media. I don't think every time I look at a Phillies writer or a national writer, you look at the, you look at the power rankings and everything else. The Phillies are a top five team. And I can't find a single, I mean, I was watching an MLB Network show the other night and they had a couple of guys, we're still certain the Phillies are the team to beat in the National League East. They were both saying this. Like, so the national media is not discounting the Phillies. I don't even think the Philly media, at least the reporters and stuff, are discounting the Phillies. There might be some in talk radio who are, and maybe some in the podcastosphere. I don't know what you call it. But there's some of our podcasting colleagues, maybe that's happening as well. But I think maybe he's hearing some of that and thinking, and he's hearing the fan base is frustrated. You know, they obviously are online, right? They're obviously on Instagram. They're on X. They're on Facebook or wherever it is. They're being told this by their family and friends or whatever. You know, hey, it seems like the fan base is pretty down on the team this year and your chances and all that. And certainly there is the feeling that and maybe this is what he's speaking to. The Dodgers are the clear favorites in the National League. They're going to be the clear favorites by everyone. They look like they've assembled a super team out there in Los Angeles. And, you know, you've got the Braves and the Mets in your own division. The Mets beat you in the playoffs last year. The Braves had won five division titles in a row. And they look at last year as a fluke because they had so many injuries. And so you can, if you're trying to, and I think this is what Nick is trying to do, get into an us against the world kind of a place. Nobody believes in us. Everybody's doubting us. No one thinks we can win. If like that's the kind of energy that he needs to have and the team needs to have and wants to have heading into the season, that can be a great motivator and I'm all for it. So go ahead and I don't agree that at all there's less pressure, because if what you're trying to tell me is that the Dodgers having had such an amazing offseason puts less pressure on us to win because no one thinks we can win, that's not at all the case.
That does not work. We talked about it a few weeks ago about like bulletin board material and I think Justin said, you know, I'd love to see the Phillies just go out there and be businesslike and do their thing. Be like, no, this is what we're here to do. And now we're doing it. And I think I want that too, but I don't know. I mean, and for that reason, I don't know if Nick is going to have a lot of guys jumping on this train.
Yeah.
Because they're not they're definitely not the, you know, underdog type guys they were in 22. And no. I think that's what he's looking to recreate. I think that's what they've been trying to recreate. And unfortunately, that is over. Time has moved on and they can't do that. Like, I don't want them to put anything up on a bulletin board and be like, this, we must beat this. Like, no, you know what the goal is. You know what you have to do. And we know what the expectations are of all of you. And that's the thing. It's like, it's not a secret. Everyone knows what you need to do. And so just do it. Just go it. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say, but like, well, it's okay to recognize that. It's not a negative thing to recognize, there is pressure on us. We want to win. Mm-hmm. The fans want us to win. Middleton wants us to win. We want to win. You know, we're out there to do that. You know, I can't tell you anything other than that. Like, the way the team is built is the way it's built. I had nothing to do with that. The only thing I could do is go out there and do my best, and that's the only thing my teammates can do, you know?
Yeah. And I would say this, too. Looking at, and I'm going to make a parallel to the Eagles this year.
I thought you might do this, yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at 2022, the Eagles fell one step short, falling in a heartbreaker to the Super Bowl. And in a way, the World Series was kind of a heartbreaker in 2022 to the Astros. That game five.
It was definitely, all of it was a heartbreaker. They did not win the World Series. It sucked.
Yeah. So they both fell a step short. And then in 2023, the Eagles got off to that great start, right? They went 10-1. It was blitz. They were, you know, they didn't look as good as the record indicated, but they were 10-1. And then they fell apart down the stretch and they lost that wild card game in the first round, right? They lost embarrassingly in the first round. Same thing to the Phillies last year. Race out to that ridiculously hot start. You know, you end up winning the National League East as a result of it, but you finish the season kind of in a little bit of a lull. You're not playing your best baseball, and then you get boat raced out of the playoffs in the first round. Are you seeing the parallels here, everybody?
I'm seeing it.
So now you come into 2024, and it seems pretty clear that this Eagles team, especially after the bye week in week five, decided, you know, we need to just focus on these core things. And the one thing you kept hearing about is like, we have as much talent, if not more talent than everyone. If we execute, we will win. And that really is the mentality I want the Phillies to have. If they execute their pitches, if they execute their at bats, if they have a game plan going into a series and they execute their game plan, and maybe that means seeing a certain amount of pitches, maybe that means being aggressive early in the count, maybe that means running more on a certain catcher, whatever it is, this team is talented enough that if they execute in 2024, they can not only win the World Series, they should win the World Series. I mean, they really do have enough talent to do it. And so that's the parallel I'm drawing from the 2024 Eagles here. It's like these two teams have kind of mirrored each other over these last 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about the start. It's about how you finish. And this 2024 Phillies team, I think, or 2025, this 2025 Phillies team, I think, understands that now. Like it's all going to be how you finish at this point.
Yeah, I think the Phillies could probably take more direction from the Eagles as they go, because it required a tightening of you know how things were going by Nick Sirianni. Mm-hmm. And that, and, you know, they stopped Victory Mondays, you know, like Sirianni had to play a more active role. Yeah. And I think Rob Thompson could do the same thing. You know, Rob Thompson could find a way to insert himself a little bit more, make things a little bit more serious, have a plan, you know? Mm-hmm. I think the team, like the teammates themselves, like the one thing we've heard a lot at the end of the season is, you know, we played for each other, you know, it's that type of relationship on the team. Like, you know, we're playing for the fans and it's our job, but like we're depending on each other to do our jobs.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what the Phillies had in 22 mm-hmm. that they don't have, that they didn't have last year, the year before. And I think that's what they need to develop. And I'll admit they play together a lot more. They are together a lot more often than the Eagles are, than football teams are. And I play a lot more games. And I think that makes it difficult. It requires some alone time.
Yes.
Which I know they don't get a lot of, but I think they can do it. I think they need to, whatever it is, whether it's that sort of thing or not, they have to they have to find whatever team dynamic works for them.
Right, right. Looking at Castellanos specifically, I was looking at his stats over the last 3 years, and I was kind of curious. Like, he's hit, on average, .263 with a .309 on-base percentage and a .435 slugging percentage. 31 doubles, 22 homers, 85 RBIs. That's what he averages each year. 31 doubles, 22 homers, and 85 RBIs. He has an OPS of .744 as a Philly. Now, in his previous six seasons, his OPS was .853. And that's probably more the type of player they thought they were getting when they signed him to the five-year contract. So I'm curious, what, given what he's done in the playoffs, and you know, last year he was really the only reliable bat against the Mets. He and really played all 162 last year. He's had some big playoff moments, and then he's kind of disappeared in the playoffs. And given the whole Nick Castellanos experience, what grade? And if you don't feel comfortable giving an actual grade, but like, how would you view his tenure in Philadelphia so far? Has it been a success? Has it been not a failure? I don't think we could say it was a failure, but you know, what are you feeling about the Nick Castellanos era here in Philadelphia?
There really isn't an area between success and failure. There isn't like a gray area of, there isn't a name for it, but besides, like, I think it's been largely positive. I think after getting himself into a hole last year, he really showed a lot of resilience, a lot of consistency. There wasn't a lot of Castellanos weirdness. He just sort of was there playing and doing the same good stuff day after day. And I think people wanted more of him, not from his bat, sure, but I think sort of that outsized personality in a way was missing somewhat.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, I think it's been successful. I don't think he's negatively impacted the team. I think his presence has been largely positive, and I think he'll be loved by the fans when he leaves. I don't think he'll stay any longer than he has to. I don't think the Phillies want him right. to stay any longer no. than he has to.
Right.
But I think he'll be looked at by the fans as he'll be a favorite. You know, he's done some great things. Fans have great memories of him. He's a lovable, strange guy. I adore him.
Yeah, I know he's a particular favorite of yours.
Yes, I enjoy him.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to ask you. I mean, and I think if I'm giving a grade on it, I'd say it's probably been like a C+ time with the Phillies. You know, he had a terrible first year in Philadelphia, and I think he hasn't been the player we thought he was going to be, but he's been a good player, and he's frankly been, he's their best outfielder right now. God. I mean, not defensively, but like, he's the only guy who's going to provide any kind of offense in the outfield really last year or this year. So you'd rather him maybe be like your second fiddle outfielder. I think that's what we were all hoping for this offseason. But you know, Nick Castellanos is going to be the most impactful offensive player that in this outfield that you have here in 2025. So I keep saying, it's like, in my mind, I want to say 2024. I know I said that a couple times a few minutes ago. It's just, yeah, not catching on.
I think it's because 2025 is still like a weird foreign spaceship year.
Yeah, it's a space odyssey year. I mean, let's not kid ourselves here. This is wild. We're at this time of our lives. All right, let's talk about JT Realmuto. He was interviewed this week by the reporters, talking about a contract extension. It sounds like both sides are interested in a contract extension for JT Realmuto. And we on this podcast, you, me, and Justin have talked about the many reasons why the Phillies would be going in that direction. I don't think anybody believes Marchand is ready to be an everyday player, and there's no obvious successor at the moment for JT Realmuto. So I anticipate that fully getting done this spring. I really do. But it sounds like they are going to move him around a little bit more. They've been very open about the fact they want him to play less behind the dish. But it sounds like they want to start moving, you know, they're going to play Schwarber in left a little bit. They want to actually, they talked to JT Realmuto about possibly getting some reps in the outfield this spring. Now, I saw Matt Gelb report that he's unlikely to play outfield in an actual game this spring, but it sounds like they're starting to maybe try and figure out, you know, can he do it? He's an athletic guy, you know, could he play outfield in a major league game at some point this year? You know, I know they're trying Edmundo Sosa in the outfield, and that seems like it's going to be more of a concerted effort to see if Edmundo Sosa can be a viable left fielder. So I think it's interesting with JT Realmuto and Edmundo Sosa, and they're talking about Kyle Schwarber playing a little bit more left field this year than he did last year, because they want to give Realmuto some of those DH at-bats.
Yep, yep, yep. I don't hate it. And weirdly, I like the idea. I don't know. I mean, I know why. I like that they are thinking about Realmuto in the outfield. If only because he's got the arm for it. If mm-hmm. you're a catcher and you could throw a bullet to second base, third base, first base, then you've got the arm to make a longer range throw. And maybe it would help his hitting a little bit more if he wasn't, you know, squatting behind the plate all the time. Yeah, I mean, it feels like a strange step back in time, but they clearly didn't make enough changes this offseason for yeah. many reasons we've discussed.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to figure out how to make it work with the guys they have. And all I can say is let's see how it goes. Like, I don't hate the idea.
No,
I mean, Schwarber, I'm sure Schwarber can still do it if they want him to. Whether he'd be good is a question. I'd rather see Sosa out there than Schwarber. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
I hate the idea of Schwarber being in the outfield. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played in his first game in the outfield last year, he hurt himself diving for a ball and missed a
PB. About that.
Yeah. No, I don't. So I want to minimize the amount of Kyle Schwarber we see in left field, even if that, you know, even if it's at the expense of DH. Just I don't know how you make that work. But I mean, maybe he'll be better this year. I mean, he's slimmed down a little bit. I mean, so, you know, last year and this year. So I maybe it'll work. I don't know. I don't like that idea. Sure seems to me, especially thinking about Realmuto going and play left field and Edmundo Sosa going out to play left field or play the outfield, that it's a definite hedging of their bets at the idea of Max Kepler, the everyday left fielder.
Completely.
Here's what I think of. I don't think the Phillies actually believe Max Kepler can be an everyday left fielder.
No,
I think that's an outright falsehood they're trying to feed to us in order to get us to buy into the Max Kepler plan. they do not actually believe he's going to be able to play in left field every day and hit against left-handers pretty much the whole season. That's why they want to have a backup plan in place. Another, because, you know, maybe Weston Wilson's the guy, maybe he isn't, but I think that's why they're doing this, is to give themselves more right-handed outfield options, because they don't have any in the system.
I feel like you're about to pull back your camera here and reveal one of those big boards with all the string and the push pins. I feel like the Max Kepler plan.
Yeah.
The only time they were going to talk about making these changes is in Clearwater. They weren't going to do it when they, you know, signed Kepler. They weren't going to say, well, we're thinking about these guys here. Why talk about it earlier than you have to?
Right.
There's certainly nothing to, I don't think there's nothing to gain by doing it early. Whether there's something to lose, who knows? But, you know, you were definitely right. There are many holes in the Max Kepler as an everyday player plan.
There are. There are many. Like, they yeah. are legion. Yeah.
I mean, all those predictions Justin made about Kepler last episode or episode before, we should make sure someone listen to that and write those down if you can.
I mean, I get the idea. I do.
Of course.
It's hope is a tactic, but that's the issue with it, you know? So, I mean, I think the other thing too, is like, they don't have any young players in the minors, right? Like, you have Weston Wilson, who I think is almost a lock to make the team if he doesn't get hurt this spring, because they need another right-handed bat off the bench, right-handed, whatever it happens to be. And, you know, for Weston Wilson has played well when he has gotten his chances to play. Like, I don't think you want him making 100 starts, but you know, maybe he can be, you know, what Matt Vierling has turned into for Detroit. Maybe, you know, Vierling's turned into a good player for the Tigers. And he certainly would be great to have here in Philadelphia. I still think the trade they made to get Soto and dealing him away was the right move at the time.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, they needed, that's what they need. They kind of need a Vierling, right now. They need that guy, and maybe that's Weston Wilson. The only other guy in the system who's somewhat close to the majors who can play the outfield and is a right-handed bat is Gabriel Rinconis Jr., and I don't know enough about him to say one way or the other if that's a if that's an actual viable thing. I don't think he's played above Redding. So my guess is Rinconis is not necessarily going to be someone that you count on if the Max Kepler experiment goes awry.
No, and I feel like they're going to have to sign, you know, they're going to have to sign a couple more dudes. They're going to have to bring some guys into spring training. There just aren't enough.
Yeah.
Or maybe, and like, I look at the team, I'm like, how did they end up with like three first baseman types? Like they've got like three or four of them. And then they've got a bunch of guys who don't play the outfield.
Well, they didn't anticipate Bryce Harper moving out of the outfield.
No, they didn't. And I think it says a whole lot about him and his fitness that they are not talking about moving him back to the outfield, even for a game.
Nope,
because it would make a certain amount of sense to put him over there, put Real Muto at first, and kick Castellanos over to left.
Yeah.
I think that's a decent thing, but they just do not want Harper out there.
It is interesting, isn't it? That hasn't even been a whisper.
Nothing. Because I was thinking about that earlier today when I looked at your show sheet. I'm just like, huh. You know who has played the outfield before quite well is the guy they currently have at first base.
Right.
And they're they must be very fearful of his elbow or of his forearm or whatever the heck it was.
They don't want to lose him. Yeah, they don't want to lose him for any amount of time. And they don't want to have him at DH in order to have him on the field because they really need Schwarber there. So they're they are really being careful about that. And that does not seem to be even the slightest inkling for any of these guys.
That'd be so easy to do. We literally just figured it out right here, unfortunately.
And the reporting is, too, that Kyle Schwarber is going to work with Bobby Dickerson to get reps at first base. Now, he tried playing some first base with Boston a couple of years ago. He's been pretty bad at first base when they've tried it.
he looks like a first baseman, but he's not.
He looks like a first baseman. Exactly right. And Bobby Dickerson has done a great job with some of these guys. So I'd like to think that Schwarber could improve enough that you could play him there because he does just have the natural size and gait of a first baseman, you know?
This is going to sound terrible. The natural oafishness.
Yeah.
It's not what I mean, but like he's got like that natural, he just looks like a guy who should be at first base.
If you're putting a baseball movie together and you're casting for your first baseman, you're looking for someone who looks like Kyle Schwarber.
Yes. You're not putting that guy in left field.
No. I want to get your thoughts on this guy. We haven't talked about him at all. And he's been a big part of the team the last couple of years. And I'm curious what your expectations are for Johan Rojas this year. I have virtually no expectations for Johan Rojas. And I wonder if I'm being unfair when I think that. Like, he's not even a thought. Like, when I think back to last year, I can't remember a single Johan Rojas moment. I can't remember a single game where I thought, the Johan Rojas game. Or where he got a big hit in a big spot or stole a big base or made even a big defensive play to save a game. I'm sure there was a moment. I'm sure there was one or two that I'm forgetting. But I think when he first came up in 2023 and we saw what kind of value he added defensively, we thought you don't need much with the bat, just give us something. And he didn't last year to the point where he wasn't playing. He wasn't playing at all at the end of last year. So they obviously still have him in the plans for 2025. They would have signed another outfielder or gotten somebody else if they didn't. So I don't know. What are your expectations of Johan Rojas here this year? I think this is going to be his second full season. It'll be technically his third season in the majors.
All right. Well, I'm looking at a couple of projections. God bless Fangraphs. They've got a whole bunch of stuff, a whole bunch of projections. I'm looking at the Baseball Reference projections, which make no sense to me. His batting average here is .260, which feels very high. Thank you.
Wow.
John's face. Very much. Thank you. Over on Fangraphs, there are a couple of different projections they have on Zips and Steamer. Those have him around the .240 range. That feels definitely more like where he is. But I am with you. I have
what's the on base percentage look like?
Oh, that's a great question.
It's got to be under 300, right?
Baseball Reference has 307 on base.
And that's with a 260 average. So
FanGraphs, all of them are under. Under
like 280, right?
290, 295, 285. Yep. Like that's what we're looking at. And that definitely feels more in line with who he is and who he's shown himself to be. And I agree. I want him to do things that are good. Which sounds like a real big, it's a big thing. I just want him to do things that are net positive, because he's not going to be a superstar. He's not going to be an all-star. He's not going to be a lot of things. But yeah. What I want is for the Phillies to figure out where best to use him and how. I feel like that's kind of been an issue for a while. Like, we've seen him when we haven't wanted to see him. Yeah. I mean, that's... He's the new... whoever he is, you know, the guy who's on the team that doesn't do well that the Phillies really believe in. He's the new Roman Quinn. You see him a lot and he is there, but he doesn't necessarily do great things. And yet, hey, it's him. And I think that's exaggerating a little bit, because Johan Rojas is not a poor player. He's good at what he does. He's great, I think, in center field. I just would like to see a little bit more positivity from him, not from his attitude, from his actual playing.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm looking, and he had, and I saw people were encouraged by this, and I don't know whether it's right to be encouraged by this, but in the Dominican Winter League, he had a great Dominican Winter League. He played 30 games in the Dominican Winter League, a .295 batting average, had an on-base percentage of .382. He walked 12 times in 30 games last year in the Dominican Winter League. You compare that to, he played in 111 plate appearances in the Dominican Winter League, he walked 12 times. In 363 plate appearances with the Phillies last year, he walked 13 times. So one additional walk. Mm-hmm. All of last year with the Phillies than he got this year in the Dominican Winter League. So I don't necessarily take those, like these winter league numbers, Arizona Fall League numbers, you know, I don't know how to take them. They're obviously not, it's obviously not the same as playing in the majors, I guess. And I know there's people who are holding out a little bit of hope that he's going to be better this year, and that these winter league numbers are kind of an indication that maybe he's going to step things up a little bit. I don't know. I think it's wishful thinking. I'd love for this kid to be part of the outfield answer here in 2025, because they really need someone to do that. They need someone to step up and be an answer, you know, whether it's Wilson, whether it's Rojas, whether it's Rinconis or somebody else. Like, some, they got to find someone to pleasantly surprise you in the outfield. They just haven't had someone do that for forever. Really, for forever.
Yeah. They did. Like, I think Hunter Pence was the last guy that I think we were all surprised by. And he came in highly recommended.
Yeah, you know, he was a star player already at that point. You're right. Yeah. I mean,
and yeah, like, it would be great. Like, if he does end up hitting .260, that's a big giant moon leap for him. Like, that's a huge step in a direction I don't know if any of us thought he'd, I don't think anyone thinks he's going to take a massive step towards that way. And yeah, if he can hit 250, I'll fall over. Cause that's an improvement. Like, that's a market improvement that you can point to. Like, the hits that he made that he did not make last year, they all mattered.
Yeah. See, he should be a guy who is hitting line drives places, getting doubles and triples. And just taking a walk, man, just grind a few at bats out here, you know, don't get yourself out, try and work the pitcher, because when he gets on, he can steal, he can turn a walk into a double in no time, you know. I mean, he has the ability to be a dynamic force in the lineup. He doesn't have to hit for a lot of power. It's just getting bat to ball, and that's the issue, and you know, having a good eye at the plate, and it's difficult to learn. We've seen the best veteran players who are aggressive have trouble learning the skill of being more selective. Kyle Schwarber did it last year. He was, you know, he was better at, you know, picking and choosing which pitches he, you know, power up and energized on, you know, and which other ones he decided just, I need a single to left here, you know. So it is possible for Major League, and he's young. He's young, and I hope the Dominican Winter League was helpful to him. His, the on-base percentage, the separation between batting average and on-base percentage for a guy like him, you'd like it to be about 60 or 70 points. So if he's got a 250 batting average, if his on-base is 310, 315, not great, but livable at the bottom of the lineup. But if you're hitting 230 and your on-base is 285, 290, you're not a Major League player. You literally can't hang unless you're just like the fifth outfielder. You can't be starting important games with that kind of a line. So
yeah.
Anyway, all right. Last thing, Alec Bohm spoke. He was one of the first guys to speak to the media, and obviously, everybody wanted to hear from him because it's been such a tumultuous offseason. He obviously got benched in the playoffs last year. We all know about that. We all know about some of the histrionics with slamming the helmets down and how frustrated he gets. Remember, he cut himself in the dugout last year after hitting the bat in the bat rack and something ricocheted and hit him in the face because he was freaking out.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was on national TV. I think it was a Sunday night game or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I read something interesting. You know, Chase Utley used to smash helmets all the time when he'd get mad. I mean, you talk about a guy who was intense and hated to make outs. Chase Utley was a guy like that. But he never did it on the field. He always did it in private. You never saw Chase Utley do that, like, out in the public. And he never took it out on the field with him. Like, he never allowed it to interfere with his defense. He never allowed it to interfere with his next plate appearances. You know, and I think that's one of the things that Alec Bohm admitted to this spring. He's like, I've been known to do some wrong things at the wrong time, I guess. It's just part of growing up, being a better player and a better teammate. And coaches have said, even like it was like from the first day of camp, they were saying that they have seen in Bohm a more mature player already in the few days that he's been there. I kind of find it a little weird that they went out of their way to say this after just like 2 days of spring training. Like, what is it we're seeing that, you know, you think is so different in Alec? But I'm not there. I don't know. I hope there is something significantly different about the way he's approaching the game, more mature. I think there's a way, and I think this is the thing with Alec. There's a way to be emotional. There's a way to play the game emotionally, to care about your at-bats, to care about deeply about when you fail, to care about when you succeed, and to get emotional, to let that emotion out, but to figure out a way to do it that's healthy, that doesn't, you know, affect you in your next at bat. You don't take it out on the field with you. It doesn't affect the next game, and it doesn't turn into an 0-35. And I think that's where he's got to get to. And it sounds like hopefully he's making his progress towards that.
It's a fascinating thing that they're talking about Alec Bohm like this with the maturity, because he's 28. Like, yeah. I had to look up what his age was, because I'm like, he's not 24, 25. He's 28 now.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know what is this code for? Is this code for something? Like, how much more mature can he be? Because they talked about this last year, too.
Yeah.
When he came, like, I'll look it up when we're done here. Last year, at the beginning of spring training, they talked about him being more mature. And, like, I get it. There isn't a lot to talk about. And I know that it's a narrative that's being pushed by the Phillies for whatever reason. But it's a little weird. I'm just going to say, it's a little strange.
It is.
You know, I will say that I found out while looking up his age that he has gone Instagram public, Instagram official, with a reporter named Erin Dolan from ESPN, right after she had the best weekend of her life at the Super Bowl. So congratulations to those two. Maybe she can help. I don't know. Like, he's mature enough
They started dating late in the summer last year. That was the rumor. Like, so they were dating. I think they first started dating when he got benched. So there was a little bit of a conversation about, you know, what was going on there? I don't know.
Guys, there's so many things I want to say right now. I'm just going to say, I'm going to try and get myself in another episode of Absolutely Hammered so I can
say
that's
where you got to do that. That's where you
gotta unload those thoughts. None of the things I have to say right now about this are appropriate.
Yeah, that's where you got to unload all that. Yeah, no doubt about it. Because I'm not saying anything about Aaron Dolan.
No, I've not.
Or the relationship or whatever.
And what I have to say is definitely not about her as a human being or anything.
Sure.
It's not about her, how she looks, what her job is. It's just about the baseball and the it's just mostly I'm thinking about so many lines from Bull Durham.
Okay.
So many lines.
He's got to breathe with his eyelids. You know?
Yes,
she's
he does.
Get him to help him breathe
through
his eyelids.
She's trying to help him do that.
Yeah.
Let's hope it works.
Yeah, I gotcha. I think you handled that gracefully.
Thank you.
That was well done. all right. Well, let's finish up the podcast here, Liz, with some final thoughts. Any final thoughts for the dear listeners?
Actually, no. I was going to talk about Alec Bohm and his girlfriend, but we've talked about it. So, yeah. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Did you go to the parade? I forgot to.
No. My beloved husband, Sean, came down with the sickness and was just not well. And I've spent the last week taking care of him. We watched from the comfort of our home in warm, the warmth with our own beers.
Yeah.
Not waiting for porta potties or anything like that.
That's the way to do that.
Seemed to be the right thing to do. If it 5 years ago, if we hadn't lived in Ohio, we would have both been in better shape. I would have been under 40, and I could have done something like that and thought that I could get through it. This time, Sean, my husband is under 40. I am not, and he was like, "We got to do this." I'm like, "All right, let's go." And
yeah,
then he got sick,
game.
And I'm like, "Thank you." In a way, I'm just like, "Thank you." I really did. It would have been cool to go, but there's no way I was getting to the art museum at 11 p.m. I'm not doing that.
Nope. No, people are camping out the night before. Listen, more power to you. That's a young man's game right there. You know, I can't even imagine. I wouldn't have fun. I'll just straight up. I would not have fun.
The fun is on the parade route, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'd have to be dodging beer cans. Like, I mean, my goodness, Howie Roseman got clocked with the beer can.
Here's the thing. You have to know he had a buzz on at that point because he was asking, a non-football playing executive, was asking the crowd full of drunken fans to throw him, again, not a football player, a can of beer. No.
Yeah, put two and two together there. He's so good with the salary cap, but he couldn't figure out the mathematics of asking for calling out for someone to throw him a beer. You know, that's...
Guys not come prepared?
Yeah.
A lot of them brought their wives or girlfriends. Like, have them bring a cooler full of whatever it is you want to drink so you can be nice and toasted by the time you get up to speak to, a million people.
Yeah. Yeah. It got me thinking about a Phillies parade this October. Like, can you imagine handing off, the Eagles parade to a Phillies parade? And the banner City of Champions, you know, in the skyline or something like that. Like, it's just trying to think of Kyle Schwarber on the parade route, you know, Bryce Harper on the parade route. Let's close our eyes for a moment.
Be Schwarber and Castellanos would be the best time.
Schwarber,
I think the two
and
of them
on the parade route. Think about what Castellanos would say at the microphones on the art museum steps.
You can't
speech, kids. Manifest it. We need to manifest with that. Like, because Bryce Harper would give the Jalen Hurts speech. We did it all together. We did it as a team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the platitudes, you know, and, you know, Philly, you know, I came here for this and not, you know, you'd hear all that.
Not eating cake, not drinking, no cheat days. Right. I'm already behind for next season.
Right, right, right. And then there'd be the backup guys, you know, who... You know, it's if heaven forbid if Garrett Stubbs is still on the team and they have a parade, you know.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good for anybody.
No, I take it back. He'd be the best time.
That's what I mean. No, I'm saying that. That's what I'm saying. And I think Alec and would be crazy on the parade route. Yeah, just getting destroyed. Yeah, I think let's just, you know, at some point this week, gang, just close your eyes and envision that scenario. And maybe we can manifest it into being. We'll see.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to remind everybody to check out our landing page over at our content partners, BillyPenn.com. We are at BillyPenn.com/Hittin' Season. That's where you can find all of our podcasts and all of our write-ups that we do to go along with this fine podcast. So again, BillyPenn.com/Hittin' Season is the place to go for everything having to do with this here fine podcast. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.